free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Tuesday, 20th of November, 2018, as we come up to the Thanksgiving holiday. We're expecting record travel. The TSA thinks that more than 25 million people will be flying. That's an increase of 7%. And they've listed all the different things that you can and cannot do. Turkeys are fine as long as they're frozen. Don't go over that weight limit, though. As are pies and even vegetable peelers. Banned items would be things like explosives. Make sure you don't take explosives with you. At least don't put that telltale countdown digital clock. That's only in the movies. No, you got that, slaves. These are the rules for travel. Now, Jim Acosta and CNN, on the other hand, they should have absolutely no rules as they troll President Trump. But they will dutifully pass on these rules for you because you are slaves. You are slaves. You know, it's kind of interesting as we look at this and the all the traffic here, one of the busiest days of the year for travel, times of the year for travel. You remember when InfoWars had the opt-out campaign that we pushed? That was the first Thanksgiving after they had done the false flag underwear attack and then immediately rolled out all of the underwear scanning machines that they had already manufactured and had in the warehouses ready to roll out just for the right event. And we had the lawyer, Kurt Haskell, explain, hey, I saw them put that guy on the plane. He was totally out of it. He didn't know what he was doing. He could barely stand up. And there's a guy in a suit, put him on the plane. And I pointed him out to my wife, what was going on? That's really strange. The guy had no ID, no credentials. I put him on the plane. And then during the plane, he tries ineptly to light his underwear. And that was the pretense for which they rolled out all these machines that had been put together by Tom Ridge, the first director of Homeland Security. They all had these things set up, ready to roll out. And so we said, we can't let them get away with this. So we told everybody, let's opt out. Let's make them manually pat us down, which I still do to this day. I hate to fly. Like my brother-in-law, who just came to visit us for Thanksgiving, said he regards it now as something like going to the dentist. You have to do it sometimes, but you really, really hate it. It used to be something that we look forward to. Being a jet setter, that was great. I mean, you could fly all over the place, you know. And we had literally upward mobility, didn't we? Planes were getting larger, faster, more comfortable. People were flying more. Now you do it if you have to. And the seats are getting smaller. The bathrooms are microscopic inside. You saw the picture that was up on the Drudge Report of some guy, you know, squeezed into a bathroom in a plane. Say, can you get into this bathroom? It is a perfect example of Agenda 21 in microcosm, if you look at the airline experience. A police state inspection, monitoring everything that you do, imposing all kinds of authoritarian rules on you. The little private corporation that becomes the government nanny, the crossing guard there to tell you what to do about everything. And don't get your name on a report because they're going to make your life miserable. And then everything moves more slowly in addition to that. But as we look at this, there's an interesting question on Reason Magazine. So could you smuggle some of these contraband items on? Well, quite frankly, yes. They said they surveyed 1,001 travelers who admitted to smuggling some type of illicit substance or prohibited item onto a plane. There are just so many illicit substances and prohibited items that you have to choose from in order to try to smuggle things on. I remember when we brought back my daughter from China, they confiscated the toys that we bought to keep her busy because she didn't speak English yet. Yeah, that would be contraband. But we've got some other contraband we'll tell you about when we come back. Stay with us. Got lots of news today.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth. truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Tuesday, 20th of November, 2018, as we have the Thanksgiving travel time, busiest time of the year to travel. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about travel news here, whether you're taking the airplane or taking a car. We've had massive protests in France, proving President Trump right once again about Emmanuel Macron. We're going to tell you what's going on there and how that affects your upcoming transportation, travel that you exercise this year. More people are flying, but actually a lot more people are driving, of course, at this time of year. We're also going to be talking about sex and the imagination. And we've got a new update on Ocasio-Cortez. We're going to give her a Schoolhouse Rock primer. I'm just a shill, a socialist shill. We'll explain how government works for the newcomer who is now looking at her new career and, quite frankly, hasn't done much research in the lead up to her coronation as the socialist queen of the left. But let's talk first about transportation. As I was saying at the top of the hour, the TSA is expecting about 25 million people are going to fly, about a 7% increase. They've got their list of what you can and cannot take on your plane. But even if something that you want to take on a plane, something as innocuous as, let's say, toys, for example. I remember when we adopted my daughter from China. She didn't speak English. She was about 5 years old. And we knew it was going to be a very difficult experience for her. So my wife wisely said, they have this market down the street. It's a wholesale market. And it was amazing, the toys that they had and how cheap they were, too. So we spent a lot of time going through there, kept her busy looking at things. But my wife picked up a bunch of toys that were going to be surprises for her to keep her busy since we couldn't communicate with her, explain to her what was going on. Everything was very strange. And so she was going to give her these toys little by little over the very long trip to fly back from China. And then we got to the airport and there was a special call. Anybody going to all the other flights, please go to Europe. But if you're going to America, go to this area for special screening. Because as Americans, we get special treatment. We're so special. American exceptionalism. No liberty for Americans. We have the least amount of liberty of anybody when we fly. Of course, everybody else is catching up with us very rapidly because we're extending that tyranny, just like the Chinese are extending their social credit tyranny to everybody else. And so we go to our special screening area, and they start pulling out the toys in front of my daughter, stealing them one by one, throwing them in the trash bin. Can't take that, can't take that, can't take that. Why? We don't know. No explanation given, no explanation needed. This is your government. They do whatever they wish to you. And as I pointed out, this busy time of year makes me think back to, I think it's about when I first started here at InfoWars. There had been the previous underwear bomber false flag, and it was a false flag. I talked about that at the top of the break. I won't repeat that for the people who got the first segment. But it was a false flag, and so as we came up to the first Thanksgiving, busiest travel time of the year, we helped organize an opt-out campaign. Say, you're going to have to pat me down. If everybody would do that and engage in civil disobedience like the French are doing against Emmanuel Macron's gasoline taxes, trying to ban cars, if we would all hang together, we could stop these people. And it was getting a lot of traction. And the government was very worried about the InfoWars campaign. And so what they announced was on the busiest day of the year, the first Thanksgiving, after they proclaimed that there was a dire threat of underwear bombs, that they would just open up, they just shut down all the screening and let everybody go through. No problem. We're just going to ignore that for today. So you're going to opt out and make us pat you down? Well, guess what? We just won't do any security today on the busiest travel day of the year. Now, subsequent to that, as we had Jonathan Corbin, an engineer, protest the travel screening machines, he was able, through discovery, as part of his lawsuit against them, to find some very interesting things about the TSA. which he was not allowed to tell anybody because they then classified it. Except they then mistakenly declassified it by posting it on pacer.gov, where they you put up the lawsuits. They were supposed to put up the redacted lawsuit. Instead, they put up the full lawsuit. And it was up there for a short period of time. And we got it here at InfoWars. Only at InfoWars. It was very interesting to me that nobody else in the media put this information up. We saved it unscribed. We posted it in an article. We gave the people the link to scribe. You could look at it. You could look at the redacted. You could look at the unredacted. You could see what the TSA did not want you to see. Yet nobody talked about that. Nobody on the left, nobody on the right. CNN didn't talk about it. Fox News didn't talk about it. They ignored it. They ignored the fact that the TSA admitted in 2011 that there was no threat to domestic airplanes or airports in 2011. Now, that's significant because in 2011, we also had a pushback here in Texas. We had a great patriot, David Simpson, out of Longview, Texas. You look at this guy, and he looks like the stereotypical Texan. Tall, thin, boots, cowboy hat, string tie, and a hard-nailed libertarian, and a Christian. And he said, you're not going to be putting your hands on our children's bodies. He offered a bill. It passed unanimously in the Texas House, saying they're not going to do that. At that point, the establishment got very concerned. Now, I remind you, this was 2011 when the TSA itself is saying there is no threat to airports or to airplanes. Because, of course, if there was a threat, their screening doesn't catch it. Still doesn't. I'll explain that to you in just a moment. To stop that from passing in the Senate, you had the lieutenant governor lead the charge. This is a guy who worked for the CIA for his entire career. And when he wanted to run for office, he ran for lieutenant governor. And he spent the most money of anybody who ever ran for state office here in Texas. They set him up in the oil business because that's where the Bushes and all those CIA people hung out. So they set this guy up. Lieutenant governor. And so he began to lead the push against that. You had the TSA come in. The federal government said, of course, Obama was in charge, said, if you don't let us do the screening and the pat-downs, we're going to turn Texas into a no-fly zone. And the Senate caved, and they shut it down. Now, David Simpson tried to do that a couple of years later. Dewhurst, I believe, was the lieutenant governor's name. He's fortunately been moved out of the political arena now. At this point, if he comes back in, I'll remind everybody what he did to us before and where what his background is and who funded him and so forth. But anyway, that's the background of the TSA. There is no threat, folks, because when they do their own internal audits, the congressmen say, I can't believe this. I mean, it's like 90% of these things are getting through. And we try to we have a guy, give him a gun, tell him to try to get this through. They get through like 90% of the time. They won't tell us the exact percent. Is it 80%? Well, it's higher than 80%. Well, in this survey that was taken, this is from Stratus Jets, a company that coordinates private plane charters. It said whether or not TSA agents will actually find all of these contrabands like non-frozen turkeys. You're allowed to take frozen turkeys, not non-frozen turkeys. So if you take a non-frozen turkey, they may or may not find that contraband. They may or may not find pocket knives or firearms or explosives. Or more than 3.4 ounces of any kind of gel or fluid. Do not try to smuggle that onto the plane. They said they surveyed 1,001 travelers who admitted to smuggling some type of illicit substance. 87.7% were not caught. And that, now we do know what that percentage is, even though they won't tell us what their own internal testing said. The success rate for travelers flying internationally was slightly lower at 80%. So what were they trying to smuggle? Guess what? Most of them were trying to smuggle pot. And they were able to do it. I'm not suggesting you do that. Stay with us. Be right back. Well, hey. whip cakes that people are trying to smuggle onto planes. It's a pot. Significant number. As they found that 87.7% of people said that they were able to smuggle something that was prohibited. Not frozen turkeys. In most cases, it's pot that they're trying to smuggle on. They said a lot of it was weed. 37% of the men and 23% of women reported bringing marijuana on a flight in defiance of the law. Now, I don't do that. I don't use pot. Seriously, I don't use it. People think that I do because I talk about the unconstitutionality of the war on drugs all the time. I don't use it, so I don't smuggle it on. What I do, though, my little bit of disobedience, I make them pat me down. I want to be a monkey wrench in the TSA's Stasi state that they have going on here. I still opt out. I also, for years, in spite of the bans on use of cell phones, I always use my cell phone. That's absolute nonsense, folks, if you stop and think about it. They reversed that, I think. They might still have some point in time where they say don't use it. It's typically when you're taking off. Now, think about that. Do you think that your cell phone, which is operating on a different frequency, they've never had a situation ever, where it has interfered with any of their equipment? Never. They're on different frequencies. That's like saying don't listen to AM because you're going to interfere with my FM radio station. Just doesn't happen. You got different frequencies for different stations, and you got different types of radios and so forth. It doesn't interfere with that at all. If it did, they wouldn't be able to get off the ground because they've got towers everywhere. And you got people all through the airport using their cell phones and so forth. It's absolute nonsense. Nonsense. I've done that on every plane flight that I've been on, and none of them have crashed so far. It's just control. It's just a control tactic. Mother, may I? Simon Says. That's all this is. That's all the TSA is. They, let me put my hands on your body, and then I'll immediately reward you. It's positive operant conditioning. Look at B.F. Skinner. They're treating us like animals. Wake up, folks. Come on. Let's get real about some of this stuff, and let's tell them to obey the law and shut this stuff down. We're not going to put up with this anymore. But let's talk a little bit more about what people are smuggling. They said you can get on, for example, in L.A. where it's legal. You know, they don't care because pot possession is legal there. But if the TSA finds it, then they're supposed to report it to law enforcement, who, again, wouldn't care because it's legal there. Nobody cares except the feds about this stuff. They might, however, because it is the transportation Stasi agency, they might report it to the next jurisdiction that you're going to. If you're flying, for example, from L.A. to Austin, here in Texas, it would be illegal, so maybe they'll snitch to the Texas police so they can pick you up when you arrive. My son informed me, as we were at break, he accidentally brought bullets through the TSA. No problem, right? You know, this happens all the time. People can get used to carrying concealed. They don't even think about it anymore. You know, they don't feel it. And so you have situations, high-profile individuals, famous, and, oh, look, so-and-so, and we all know who they are. They're a singer or they're an entertainer or whatever. And they got caught by the TSA trying to smuggle a gun onto the plane as if they're a threat. You know, back in the 70s, you could take your rifle. If you're going on a hunting trip, you could take it and you could check it in at the front where the coats are. You could take your rifles to school because you're going to be target practicing with ROTC. You could drive with a rifle in the back of your pickup truck. And we didn't have these shootings because we didn't have SSRIs and other issues that are really what the factor is. It's not the presence of guns. We actually have more guns, but we have more gun prohibitions. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit about guns today because there's some new gun information. We've had somebody killed as part of a red flag issue. These things are very dangerous. They were pushed very heavily by the Republican Party, and I said this was going to happen when they did it. So now we've had somebody killed after their due process was violated, after they murdered the Constitution and your due process. Now they're going to murder gun owners. It really does play into what we've been talking about the last couple of days, the arrogance of these people coming out and saying, we're going to take the guns. You don't like that? We might just kill you. You know, drop bombs on you. We ended that argument about resisting the government when we started dropping bombs from planes. And we got nuclear weapons. Yeah, they're legit. We'll use them, so shut up. We've got all the force. I think, you know, when you listen to these Democrats talk, they're now sounding like Chairman Mao. Power comes out of the barrel of a gun. And they're going to have all the gun barrels. That's their attitude. And I think it's very telling. But let's go back to this whole situation with the TSA and travel. Folks, it is a sorry situation when nobody recognizes their rights. This is how we get into the situation where they're confiscating guns, where they're confiscating our free speech, where they're shutting down websites, demonetizing people because they don't like your speech or because you are a gun seller or a gun retailer, or maybe you're just the NRA. And so they come after your speech. We're going to talk a little bit about sex. That's something that'll get you banned as well on social media. If you are a feminist and you say men are different than women, you get blackballed by Twitter. We'll give you some examples of that. You now got some feminists saying President Trump is going to be their salvation, if anybody can save them from this insanity that we're descending into. But before we move on to that, let's finish about some of the transportation information. We have Ford saying they want to get rid of that new car smell. I saw this on the Drudge Report. And I thought, that's kind of weird. But here's the key thing, folks. The key story of this is not that Ford wants to get rid of the new car smell, because people in America love the new car smell, right? We even sell air fresheners to restore that new car smell to your car. You know, you can buy all kinds of air fresheners. You can make it smell like leather, or you can make it smell like a new car or whatever. Ford Motor Company, however, wants to get rid of that smell. Why? Because the Chinese don't like it. And the Chinese market is big, and they're going to dictate what we get. Isn't that interesting? Ford Motor Company, according to USA Today, has filed a patent application for odor removal that eliminates the new car smell after a vehicle has been purchased. This is the latest attempt in an industry effort to accommodate consumer tastes in different parts of the world. Consumers in China say they hate the new car smell. Unpleasant interior smell and odor remains a top industry problem in that market. To put that in context, it nearly doubles the problem rate of the second most prevalent problem, excessive fuel consumption. So what the car smells like is twice the number of complaints as the number two issue. Chinese buyers, more than 10% of drivers complained about the issue, according to J.D. Powers. Ford made headlines in 2017 because they were using a group of recruits that they called golden noses to make sure that the cars didn't smell bad. And the question I have is, we just had Ford announce they're going to stop selling cars. And they have... They're discontinuing everything except for SUVs and pickup trucks. They're not going to sell. They're going to sell Mustangs, and they've got some kind of Ford Focus. It's not a real Ford Focus. They had some sporty models. This is like some European Econobox Ford Focus we never even had in this market. So those two cars, Mustang and that thing. So are the Chinese buying pickup trucks now? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Move me on to any black square.
It's your move. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
That's right, folks. What are you trying to capture in life? Are you trying to capture freedom? We're talking about the political sphere here. And what is it? Are you trying to get safe and secure? Well, you're not going to get that if you're not free. So I want to talk a little bit about freedom. We talked about the TSA. I talked about travel. Ford is saying, again, they're going to start tailoring what they produce to the taste of the Chinese market. The Chinese don't like the new car smell, so we've got to get rid of the new car smell. And as I looked at that, it raised several questions. I mean, the first one I talked about was like, you know, what's going on with this? Because Ford doesn't want to sell cars anymore. Maybe they're going to sell cars in the Chinese market, cars that don't have a new car smell. But here in the domestic market, they're getting rid of all cars except for the Mustang and a little Econobox. The rest of them are going to be pickup trucks. Are the Chinese buying pickup trucks? Are they selling different things in China? Will Ford even bother to sell cars You know, Ford was having great sales, and Wall Street was not happy because they had a CEO who was focused on selling cars. They don't want them to sell cars. The other car companies like GM and Volvo, now owned by the Chinese, Volvos, they were focusing on autonomous cars, basically taxis. They want to be taxi companies. They don't want to be car companies. They don't want to sell you cars. They want to rent them to you by the mile, by the ride. And so they fired the CEO at Ford that was doing a great job of designing cars that people wanted to buy. And they put a guy in charge that was coming from their mobility department because they see themselves as a mobility company. So you're going to have those little autonomous boxes, little autonomous taxis, mobility units, not cars. To which I look at that and I say, well, you know, the Chinese may not like the smell of new cars, but I don't like the smell of vomit. That's why I'm not going to be riding in their autonomous taxis, because they're not going to have anybody in there that's going to be cleaning up after some drunk takes their taxi. I mean, you have a human in the taxi. If that happens, they drive it somewhere and get it cleaned up. But, you know, autonomous car, it's just going to be whatever the last person left in there. No, thank you. No, thanks. I want to have control over my transportation. I want it waiting on me instead of me waiting on it. I have already played that game. Back when I was in college, I had to wait on a mainframe computer that everybody was sharing. No, thank you. I'd rather have a personal computer that waits on me. Most of the time, the personal computer is just sitting there executing no ops, just waiting for me to do something. Waiting for me to interact with it some way. It's so eager to please and just standing by. And I like that. I like that about my car. My car is out in the parking lot just waiting for me to get in and crank it up and go somewhere. I like that too. I like machines that wait on me. I don't like waiting on machines. I don't like being told by government what to do either. Or big corporations. I don't like them controlling my speech, my transportation, what I can own. Don't like that. Not going to go there. So, raises a couple of questions about that. Now, in France, we have a president who is just lecturing President Trump about the evils of nationalism and how nationalism was not patriotism or vice versa, something like that. Problem is, Macron has got a problem in his own country. We're talking about transportation. Of course, Macron is pushing globalism. And the essence of globalism, if you're going to have global government, you've got to pay for it somehow. So they've decided that they're going to create a scare, a false alarmism. That's what we call the climate alarmists. And, of course, it is a false alarmism, telling everybody that the earth is going to melt unless they take your cars, stop you from eating meat. As a matter of fact, we need you to stop breathing out carbon dioxide completely, even though plants need it to grow. You've got to stop breathing. So we need fewer humans as well. We're going to control the number of people. We're going to reduce the population by 90, 95, 99%. Who knows? Maybe it'll just be Macron and Soros, and they can enjoy the entire world by themselves. But that is part of the globalist agenda. And so as part of that, they have to create a global crisis and then use that to fund their global government with a global tax, the carbon tax. And he's doing his part. They have the French protesting because Macron is doing such a good job with the carbon tax. He's also insisting that the UK do more to abide by this. And so what we had was this last Saturday, more than 282,700 people were protesting this. They had yellow vests. They took to the streets. In many places, they literally took over the streets, according to the French Interior Ministry. Drivers blocked roads at some 2,000 locations across the country, generating backups for miles, causing one death. Protesters' chief complaint, the rising cost of diesel fuel. It's going to be all fuel, folks. They're starting with the diesels. They've already banned them in many German cities. They are charging people more to even park them in many UK cities. They've put zones called ultra-low emission zones, redlining places where you can't take cars or where you pay extremely high taxes if you go into them throughout the UK, throughout other places. It's become so prevalent that even in Germany, where a significant part of their industry is based on the automobile manufacturers, they have said, BMW said, hey, if they ban these cars that we're selling you right now, we'll trade it in for something else. We'll give you complete credit onto something else. They came up with tens of billions of dollars in fines against Volkswagen to try to make sure that they could not sell diesels. And they got the message after they locked up one of their executives trying to go to Disneyland. He's now in jail in the United States. Tens of millions of dollars. Nobody died over the so-called emission cheating scandal that they had. They immediately came out and said, we've got a whole new line of electric cars. Leave us alone. That type of thing. If you go back and look at this map, show that map again. The locations of the fuel protests in France. If you look at that map, it's all yellow. All of France is yellow. They put little yellow dots there wherever they had a protest, and it covered the entire country. So they're saying about 282,000 people, according to the government. Now, other sources say that it was 300,000 to a million people throughout the country. As a matter of fact, on just one Facebook page, they had 850,000 people signing a petition to support the people going out and protesting with these yellow vests. And that was just one page. They had hundreds of pages on Facebook calling on people to join the protest. They said three in four French people agree Macron is wrong. This is what one person had to say. They said the chief complaint, of course, was his commitment to curbing climate change by enacting higher carbon taxes for 2018. Many who turned out on Saturday to voice any number of other frustrations with the person that they call the, quote, president of the rich. Of course, he's a former Rothschild banker. He is the president of the rich. He is the representative of the globalist elite. This is a little guy with a Napoleon complex who wants a permanent EU army. He wants to be head of the European army. He wants to be head of the EU, ultimately. He wants an empire. He openly talks about power, projecting power with his empire, with his European army. And three out of four people can't stand him. President Trump said this when he started coming after Trump, directly talking about nationalism, patriotism. President Trump tweeted at the time, he said, the problem is Emmanuel suffers from a very low approval rating in France, 26%. That's exactly right. And they have an unemployment rate of almost 10%. President Trump went on to say he was just trying to get onto another subject. By the way, there is no country more nationalist than France. Very proud people, and rightfully so. And then he followed up with, make France great again. Yeah, get rid of Macron. Now, the prime minister in France, Edouard Philippe, said that the government had heard the anger of the people. We hear you. We feel your pain. But they're not going to do anything about it. Not going to do anything about it. They reiterated that they're going to keep the current fuel taxes and they will increase them yet again in January. Let them eat cake. Marie Antoine Macron. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Just one more little factoid about travel coming up over the Thanksgiving weekend. We have the AAA, the American Automobile Association, has said that they believe that it'll be about 54 million Americans that will travel 50 miles or more for Thanksgiving. I thought that was kind of interesting because they also say, I don't know if this is also coming from the AAA or another source, 4.7 million will travel by air. Now, the TSA was saying about five times that. They were saying about 25 million people traveling by air. I don't know. I mean, that's TSA may be inflating their importance. I can certainly believe that 54 million Americans would travel 50 miles or more. I can also believe that more of them would be driving than flying. So those figures sound more reasonable to me than what the TSA had. But let's talk about life outside of a confined airplane. Because as I pointed out, the airplane has really become, I think, a metaphor for what they want to do to you everywhere in your life, for the smart cities, the Agenda 21, the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability. Pack you in like sardines, bully you, with uniformed people, both government uniformed people and uniformed people from the corporation, watch and track everything that you do, fill you up with all these little petty rules, and make your life total hell. That's what flying is, in my opinion. And this is what they're going to be doing in the cities. And I had previously, we had, I think, one of the first people who had announced his decision to run for president in 2020 was a New York entrepreneur named Andrew Yang. And his central focus on his campaign was going to be universal basic income. That is a very important part of their agenda to control you. As you look at the robots that they're going to be using to replace us in so many different avenues of our lives, the work that we do, as people lose their jobs, they say, well, you know, it's going to get very dangerous because, you know, that proletariat, these people have a Marxist orientation, these technocratic elite, they are Marxists. Remember, it was the central bankers who gave Vladimir Lenin $10 million in gold and put him on a sealed train from Switzerland to Russia to start the Russian Revolution. It was central bankers who did that. These people do not support capitalism. They're not capitalists at all. They are fascist thieves, as Gerald Celente was pointing out yesterday, or was it Friday? I don't know when we had Gerald Celente on. But yeah, we can call it crony capitalism, but it really is just thieves, you know, people stealing money from ordinary people or small business and medium-sized business people and redistributing it to people like Jeff Bezos. It's just thievery. It's not capitalism. Not even, it kind of discredits capitalism to even call it crony capitalism. Because people like Ocasio-Cortez aren't going to understand the distinction. It's too nuanced. It's got that capitalist word in there. I prefer, anyway, to use the term free markets because that's really the essence. If we have freedom, I can get capital. But if we don't have freedom, even if you've got capital, you're not going to keep it very long if we don't have freedom. So I like to talk about free markets. It's free markets that we really should be pushing for. I think that defines it. And it also excludes anything along the lines of crony capitalism or fascism. Nevertheless, let's get back to Andrew Yang. I wanted to have him on. I reached out to him. I said, come on, let's talk about universal basic income, because I wanted to get somebody to actually advocate for this new ingenious form of slavery. Slavery. It's welfare for all, which means dependence for all. Welfare does not work. And we've seen people like Charles Murray, libertarian and conservative economists like Charles Murray, who wrote Losing Ground back in the 1980s. It became the basis for welfare reform during the Reagan administration. And he was pointing out how welfare had not helped the people that it was supposed to help. It just made them dependent. It put them on a plantation as slaves. And they used that to push through welfare reform. But now you got Charles Murray, who talked to us about how welfare is destructive to people. Now he's pushing universal basic income. Why? Because he and the elites see this massive wave of depression-level unemployment coming from automation, robotics, artificial intelligence, and they're very afraid. They're afraid we're going to overthrow them. And so they're pushing this as stability. So enter Andrew Yang, who is a Democrat. He likes universal basic income because he is an authoritarian socialist, and so I wanted to debate him on that. He found out who I was, and then he declined to come on. I said, come on, Yang, I'll be the yin to your yang, and we'll talk about this thing. But now he's come up with a new approach. Now, in addition to pushing universal basic income, Andrew Yang has another pet project, and that is a social credit system like China. What could possibly go wrong, right? This New York entrepreneur, who is the first one to announce that he wanted to run for president for 2020, says he wants to implement a system in which a government-run mobile app rewards Americans with digital social credits for good behavior. You would receive these DSCs for things that he thinks are good. Things like participating in a town fair, fixing a neighbor's appliance, tutoring a student. Oh, you get little brownie points from the Democrats if you do what they like. He said they could cash the points in for experiences. They could support causes. They could transfer points to others for special occasions. Oh, I'm going to give you some DSCs. As their permanent balance gets higher, he said, they might qualify for various perks, like throwing a pitch at a local ball game or having an audience with their local congressperson. Whoa. You could have an audience with a local. What are they, the Pope or something? Royalty? The last thing in the world I would spend a second doing is to have an audience with a congressperson. These people don't know anything. What a statist orientation this guy has. The most socially detached would be most likely to ignore all of this, he added. But of course, we would not punish them like they want to do in China. No, his would only be positive. Now, it's important for him to put that in there because, you know, the Chinese have bragged about the carrot and the stick. As they have summarized it, their reward and punishment, they said, they will enable those who are trustworthy followers of the chairman to roam everywhere. But those who are discredited will not be able to take a step or have a job or do anything. You'll be completely crushed. That is the kind of authoritarian nightmare that they're talking about. And, of course, this is coming from a Democrat who is offering you a universal basic income. Yes, that's right. The government will give you all income, and they will give you credits if you do the right thing. They'll give you little pats on the head. That same kind of government will come in with punitive measures, regardless of what he has to say. It's inherent in the system. His platform also calls for the government to sponsor journalism. Well, yeah, what could possibly go wrong with government-owned media? What an incredible status. No wonder he doesn't want to come on my show. Please come on, Andrew. I'm serious. I'll be very nice to you. I'll do it painlessly. How about that? Nevertheless, let's talk about what is going on with drugs here. This is absolutely amazing and a personal tragedy. This guy has a wife and three kids, a young man. His name is Daniel Best. He's a former pharmaceutical executive. He resigned in that position where he's making $500,000 a year to work under Alex Azar at the at Health and Human Services. Now, I don't know what he was doing there, but he was found outside of a garage door exit of an apartment building. The senior advisor to HHS Secretary Alex Azar was found just outside of a garage door. He was bludgeoned to death, beaten to death. And listen to this. It has been ruled a suicide. Can you believe this? These people need to go back and read Sherlock Holmes or Arthur Conan Doyle. He said, when you rule out the impossible, what is left, no matter how improbable, is the truth. I mean, that's when we look at investigations like this, right? That's the way anybody does investigations. It's called deductive reasoning. You deduct the things that are not possible. It is not possible to beat yourself to death in a suicide. Come on. Just like Gary Webb didn't commit suicide by shooting himself twice in the head. This guy, absolutely amazing that he would have multiple blunt force injuries. This is being reported by several. This is a Free Thought Project. A lot of people have reported this. Being reported by Cleveland.com. He had said back in May, he said they'd questioned whether or not he'd advocate for his former colleagues in the pharmaceutical world or where they'd show the public where the bodies are buried.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, we're just talking about the suicide by bludgeoning himself to death of a former pharmaceutical executive who left that position making $500,000 a year to come to work for Health and Human Secretary Alex Azar. And, you know, the pharmaceutical regulations that have come out recently, I don't know everything that they've done, but I do know that for them to say that these Ask Your Doctor commercials that fund all of the cable news networks that they need to have a disclaimer at the end of them saying not only here are all the different horrific side effects of this drug that they are obligated to tell you about. And of course, they do that as they show, you know, children and pets romping in fields in slow motion. They rattle off all these horrific side effects of these pharmaceutical drugs, many of them exacerbating the very condition for which you took the drug. But now they're going to have them, they're going to require that if it's over a certain amount that they have to, per month, that it costs to use this drug, they have to mention that as well. And all the top 10 drugs that they advertise, they range anywhere from $500 to several thousand dollars per month to use those drugs. So yeah, ask your doctor and your lending officer if you can use this drug. But the crew was telling me as we're talking about this strange thing, a person beaten to death and the police ruling it a suicide. One person who knew him, a former colleague, said he's got a really nice personality. He's not a jerk. He's not overbearing. He's approachable. People who worked with him liked him. They appreciated working with him. He was very transparent. He's very honest. He didn't play any games. And now he winds up beaten to death and they rule it a suicide. As I was saying just before we went to break, in May, one news organization said that he was a seasoned negotiator. His name is Best. They questioned whether he would be an advocate for his former colleagues in the pharmaceutical world, or if, in the words of a lobbyist, he'd show the public where the bodies are buried. Where the bodies are buried. You know, it kind of reminds me, actually, the crew reminded me. I'd forgotten about this. It wasn't that long ago. It's the beginning of the year, January 2018, have a couple of billionaires found dead in their mansion. This guy was a pharmaceutical billionaire. And he and his wife were found tied up and beaten to death in their home, in their mansion, outside of Toronto. Police ruled that a suicide as well. Eventually, they came back and said, okay, they were murdered. How do you tie yourself up and beat yourself to death? And now we've got this individual who has been found beaten to death, blunt injury trauma, a tragedy for his family, married, has three children, a young guy, and they're calling it a suicide, just like they called it a suicide when this couple was found dead. Honey Sherman and Barry Sherman, he was 75, his wife was 70. They ruled that a suicide. They were found with a men's leather belt wrapped around their necks and tied to the pool railing. And they said, no, suicide. Yeah. I guess it is suicidal to do something that your partners and big pharmaceutical companies don't like. There's an example of this. I mean, well, I guess you could call me a conspiracy theorist because I think that people who produce pharmaceutical drugs and make billions of dollars wouldn't have any problem murdering people. Because that's by definition what they're doing with their product. Ask your doctor what funds Fox News and CNN. And now we've got from USA Today a drug company that raised the price of a life-saving opioid overdose antidote more than 600%. Why? Because they could. Because they don't care about people's lives. They went from $575 for this opioid overdose protection to more than $4,100, costing millions to the federal government. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Hat tip to Julian and crew for reminding me of the death of that Toronto billionaire couple, pharmaceutical couple found tied with men's leather belt wrapped around their neck, dead by their swimming pool. And, of course, the police initially ruled that a suicide. Eventually, they said it was murder. Now we've had a guy who was a pharmaceutical executive left that position to work for Alex Azar. at Health and Human Services. They've come out with some regulations to expose the overcharging of the pharmaceutical industry. He is now found. I don't know what the motivation for this is, but I tell you what, I don't believe if he died of blunt force traumas that it was a suicide. I mean, what did he do? Repeatedly run into the wall to kill himself? Come on. It's absurd what they put out there. I don't know if he knew Hillary or not, but the Clintons aren't the only people who kill. There's a lot of money involved here. Just take a look at this one story that I mentioned at the top of the hour from USA Today. Drug company raised the price of a life-saving opioid overdose antidote more than 600%. They went from $575 to $4,100. This is a Richmond, Virginia-based company called Kaleo, I think. It's maybe the way you pronounce that. It's got a gravitas mark on there. I don't know. Anyway, they increased the price of their auto-injectable overdose reversal drug, Evzio. They make these things up. They could come up with, I guess they spend most of the money on this research trying to come up with these absurd names for these drugs. The company also changed its sales strategy. They encouraged doctors to complete paperwork identifying it as a medically necessary drug. That allowed them to bypass the generic versions of naloxone, which is the generic name of the drug. So Senator Rob Portman, an Ohio Republican who chairs the subcommittee, said the fact that one company dramatically raised the price of its drug and cost taxpayers tens of millions of dollars in increased drug costs, all during a national opioid crisis, is simply outrageous. They're saying that because they increased that price by 600%, a six-fold increase, it resulted in an increased cost to Medicare and Medicaid of more than $142 million since 2014. Where is Ocasio-Cortez when we need her? Now, she wants to give Medicare for all. So does Bernie Sanders. Medicare for all. These people can't control costs. They don't know how to manage a system. They don't even know where they're going to come up with the $30 trillion. That's even more than the Pentagon lost. Pentagon lost $21 trillion. Our entire accumulative national debt. All of the annual deficits from the beginning of America until today. All of those cumulative debts, $21 trillion. They're about to raise the debt ceiling again to $22 trillion. But the Pentagon has lost $21 trillion, in addition to all the money that they squandered in Afghanistan and these other wars, that they will account for. There's $21 trillion unaccounted for. We don't know what happened to it. Not allowed to know. We're just the taxpayers. We just pay the bills. And then the Democrats come along, and they want to give us Medicare for all. $30 trillion? I don't know how we're going to pay for it, they said. We don't care how we're going to pay for it. I guess we'll just print more paper. This is a prescription for financial disaster. And so as we look at these drug companies and we look at their total disregard for life and their total fixation on money, shame on the Washington Times. Shame on you for putting out this article pushing parents to give flu vaccines to their kids. They're whining. Laura Kelly, shame on you at the Washington Times for putting this out yesterday. One-third of parents won't vaccinate their children against the flu. And then saying, what's more, one in five parents said healthcare workers didn't provide a strong opinion on flu vaccine. No. So you got to get this. You got to put more pressure on them from the medical community. We know that it just compromises people's immune system. Perhaps you know somebody who is duped into getting this and then immediately got the flu. It always happens to the people that I know that are foolish enough to get this. And have you read the insert? Maybe one out of three parents read the insert and decided that the risk, the dangerous risk, was not worth it. I personally know two adults who came down with Guillain-Barré syndrome after getting their flu vaccine. Not worth it. No, thank you. I will take things that will boost my immune system, not degrade it. Even if you thought this was effective, how in the world do they know what strain of flu you're going to be exposed to? They don't. It's a crap shot. And the risks are even worse when you look at the insert and see what is in this stuff. But this shill for the pharmaceutical industry, Laura Kelly at the Washington Times, writes this. The flu vaccine is recommended not only to prevent disease, but also to lessen the severity of illness if flu is contracted and to create herd immunity, helping prevent disease with a critical number of people vaccinated. Blah, blah, blah. We've heard all this before. At least two children have died from flu-related complications so far this year. Look, these people who are pushing vaccines, they can't even explain the polio-like epidemic that is happening out there because they're pushing vaccination with live polio vaccines. Now, the flu stuff is not live, I don't believe. I don't know. I didn't research it that deeply. I researched it enough to know that I'm not going anywhere near it. Nobody in my family is. As we look at the police, this great article here from Free Thought Project that should make us all concerned about what is going on with the war on drugs. An innocent grandmother jailed for months because cops mistook cotton candy for meth. They jailed her for having cotton candy in her car. They called it meth and sent her to jail. Now, it gets even more absurd than that. This is in Georgia. As Free Thought Project points out, an innocent grandma, Dasha Fincher, kidnapped by police, thrown in a cage for months. We call that being arrested and jailed. But I think that's actually a better description in this case, especially kidnapped and thrown in a cage. Not because she did anything wrong, but because police couldn't tell the difference between cotton candy and meth. It was New Year's Eve, 2016. She said they found cotton candy on the floorboard of the car. As the video shows, the bag police claimed was meth was an obvious bag used to hold cotton candy. It looked nothing like the Ziploc bags or other tiny bags that meth is usually found in. It would be like a cocaine dealer selling coke from a purple Crown Royal bag, writes Free Thought Project. They said the cotton candy was blue as well, which is atypical because real meth is clear or white, and only drug dealers looking to be like Breaking Bad add blue tint to their product. It's highly uncommon. I guess the only reason you would do that is because, like they said, you watched Breaking Bad, and so, you know, if you're going to scare somebody with a bomb, when it wasn't a bomb, all these scares that were out there, you know, you put a digital clock on there, not even an alarm clock, but a digital clock with a countdown, because, you know, that's the way they do it on all the TV shows. And so, you know, if you're trying to look like you're Breaking Bad, you add blue tint to your meth. But in real life, they don't do that anymore, and they put digital countdown clocks on bombs. Still, however, this innocent grandmother was accused of trafficking a large quantity of blue meth in a cotton candy bag that looked like cotton candy. Oh, she's clever. But it's not going to fool those cops. You may try to disguise this as cotton candy, but you ain't going to fool us. So Corporal Williams tested the substance based on the packaging and the crystal-like features, he said. They used the highly faulty field test kits, which have been known to produce false positives. See, the question is this for you, folks. I'll tell you why this is a problem, and it is a bigger problem than just one person. It'd be bad enough if it was just one person. But reality is that this affects a lot of people because of this drug testing kit. But the real question is not whether or not the police can tell the difference between cotton candy and meth. It's whether or not you can tell the difference between the war on drugs and the Bill of Rights. Can you? Do you understand the difference? Do you understand how those two things are mutually exclusive? Do you understand how the United Nations has enacted something that destroys our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and our individual liberties? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I want to tell you the danger to your families, not just this grandmother who went to jail for several months, who is now suing for compensation. And of course, it won't be any compensation from the people who unfairly locked her up. There won't be any compensation from the drug company that is the company that creates these tests for controlled substances. That's making a lot of money off of this, sending a lot of innocent people, thousands of innocent people to jail. There won't be any compensation from them. It'll be compensation from the taxpayers, unfortunately. She deserves to be compensated but there must be a change in this system. So I'm going to tell you, give you an update on this, finish this story, and then I want to get into Ocasio-Cortez. And we're going to explain to her how government works. We're going to go back to Schoolhouse Rock, because I think that's kind of the level at which she operates. So we'll have that for you coming up in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the sales that we've added here at InfoWars. Coming up to Black Friday for a week, we're going to drop prices, already have, 50% off all InfoWars Life products and free shipping. Things like BrainForce Plus, Survival Shield X3 Nascent Iodine, Super Male, Super Female Vitality, Silver Bullet, all those, 50% off and free shipping. Super Blue Toothpaste, again, that is the toothpaste without fluoride. It has the good halogen iodine in it, and it has nano silver in it. A great toothpaste. You know what the difference between our toothpaste and the other toothpaste that you buy in the store? Most of them have fluoride. They add that. They're proud of the fact they have fluoride. Our toothpaste does not have a poison warning on the back of it. The other guys do, if they have fluoride in there. There's a warning, warning you that if you or your children swallow this, go to poison control. That should tell you something right there. Ours doesn't need that, because we don't have fluoride in there. We have the good halogen, and we have nano silver. Nano silver is very effective at killing not only bacteria, but also viruses. And, of course, bacteria creates bad breath. It creates gum disease, a gum disease that can lead to tooth loss. It can also lead to heart disease. So Super Blue Toothpaste, one of the products that we have, 50% off plus free shipping. Many, many products. DNA Force, big savings on DNA Force at 50% off and free shipping. Plus, as part of the sale, you get 2x Patriot points. That's our reward system. For those of you who buy frequently from us, you can accumulate Patriot points, and you can use that to get further discounts. Also, we have the Alexa Pure Pro water filter, $123 off. It's about 50% off. And that is the large Alexa Pure Gravity Feed water filter. And one more product I'll tell you about, and that is the Alexa Pure Breeze, the air filter. That is 40% off. Big savings on that as well. We have several of these throughout the office, throughout the studios here. They are very, very effective, totally silent, very attractive to look at. I have one at home. We use it frequently. And whenever we have something that we're cooking that really gets out of control, the fan over the stove can't get rid of the odor, we put that on. It immediately senses that you've got something there in the room. It turns bright red, and then as it starts to remove it, it goes from a red to a purple, and then when it's completely eradicated, it senses that, and it shows blue. And then it basically adjusts the speed of the fan down. But you don't hear it, even when it's operating on high speed. It's a great product. You can get that right now, 40% off the Alexa Pure Breeze product at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, getting back to this innocent grandmother who was jailed for months because she had cotton candy. And the police have a war on drugs. And they also have a very faulty testing product that is causing a lot of grief for a lot of people. So they saw this, and in spite of the fact that it bore absolutely no resemblance to meth, according to the people who know, I know what cotton candy looks like. I don't know what meth looks like. I didn't even watch Breaking Bad. So, but they said, yeah, it's not typically blue. It's only in the movies that they do that. But they ran the test on it. It came back positive. And they said tens of thousands of people, according to Free Thought Project, have been convicted and have served time. Even in many cases, getting a felony for crimes that they didn't commit, according to a report, because the cases on them relied on unreliable field drug test kits. As WMAZ reports, this innocent grandma was put in jail for more than 3 months. The judge set her bond at $1 million. In March 22nd, 2017, the lab tests, where they did further testing on the cotton candy, can you imagine being a lab technician? They think this is what? They came back and said there is no controlled substances in the cotton candy. You just wait, though. That's going to happen because the Democrats want to ban sugar. So they'll be locking people up for sugar in no time at all. Anyway, she said during that time that she was in jail because she couldn't make the $1 million bail, she said, my daughter had a miscarriage. I wasn't there for that. My twin grandsons were born. I missed that also, she said, locked up in jail because the police found cotton candy. And she said, I want Monroe County to pay for what they did to me. Well, of course, it's going to be the taxpayers who pay. This kit is sold by the Safariland Group. Yes, would you like to go on safari? We have these nice cages that we'll put you in like an animal. It's very easy to arrange that trip. All you have to do is make sure your local police department buys the standard $2 drug test kits that the police can use out in the field. They've been proven to be unreliable. Studies have shown how everyday foods and spices and medicine can test positive in these field drug tests. In one experiment, they even discovered that air could give a false positive as a drug. So, folks, the bottom line is this is a horrific experience for this grandmother. But according to National Litigation and Public Policy Organization, the Innocence Project, at any given time, there's an estimated 40,000 to 100,000 innocent people locked up in U.S. prisons. And this is one big reason why. The director of a lab recognized by the International Association of Chiefs of Police for Forensic Science Excellence has called the field drug testing kits totally useless because they generate so many false positives. But of course, if it generates a false positive for you or your family, you're going to go to jail. Especially if it's a massive quantity that it generates a false positive. I mean, she's got this big bag of cotton candy. Oh, I mean meth, right? And this is the reality, folks. We pay for this kind of stuff. I, as a non-drug user, do not want to pay to lock people up. I do not want to pay to compensate people who have been unjustly locked up. I don't want to run the risk that I'm going to be pulled over, and because of the way that I look, or because of suspicion, or because they've just got a quota to fill, that I might be sent to jail because I've got cotton candy in my car that they think is meth. You should all be concerned about this. You should all be concerned about our loss of due process. These rights were won at great expense. In most cases, not by fighting a foreign war. It's older history that we've forgotten. People who went to jail like this and demanded that we have due process before you confiscate our freedom, confiscate our property, confiscate our children. Because it's not just the war on drugs. We don't have due process anywhere. We're not the rich and powerful, are we? We'll be right back.
Liberty. It's your move. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, I was just saying in the last segment, they didn't really care about your due process. It's important for Kavanaugh to have due process, and I agree, he should have due process. He should be innocent until proven guilty. You know, I've got an update on Kavanaugh. We still have his accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, is still making thousands of dollars. She has made, in just one of these online solicitations, the accuser of Brett Kavanaugh has made $850,000. Just in the last weekend, she made more than $4,000. It continues to go up. She's on her way to becoming a millionaire. And it's very important that we understand that due process needs to be afforded to everybody. Here's an example right here in Texas, right here in the Austin area, Cedar Park, Texas. Going back to September 2017, about a year ago, you had a young man, 21 years old, facing 99 years in prison for a violent crime that he didn't commit. He was cleared, finally, by a Facebook selfie. Now, here is a twist, because typically people are getting in trouble because of what they put on Facebook. It's being misconstrued. It's being interpreted as a hate crime. You showed a picture of yourself holding a rifle, you're fired. That type of thing. In this particular case, what it did was it showed that he wasn't there, could not have possibly committed the crime. But this is what he was facing. This is a guy. His name is CJ Precopia. Christopher Precopia goes by the name of CJ. He was working in a lumberyard. All of a sudden, the police show up, arrest him. His charge was breaking into his ex-girlfriend's home 2 days prior, attacking her with a box cutter, carving an X onto her chest, according to Austin's TV K-View here. He was confused. He hadn't spoken to her in 2 years. He'd only dated her for 6 weeks in high school, back when he was 17 and she was 15. So this is 4 years later. Their breakup was unfriendly, he said, but they remained apart. He didn't even know where she lived. He said, I had no idea who had even accused me of this. I had no idea why everything was happening. But the officers basically came back and said, don't act like you don't know what we're talking about. His ex-girlfriend told the police that he came towards her in an aggressive manner, pushed her into the ground, pushed her on the ground, punched her in the face, cut her with a box cutter. She said, I could hear the slices being made. So, if true, a horrific crime. If true. All women have a right to be heard. But whether you're a woman or a man, you don't have a right to be believed without somebody else being able to answer the charges in court and to be able to confront these charges. And they did. The parents had to pay $150,000 in jail, in bond, rather. And isn't that interesting? That was less than what they put bail up for the woman who had cotton candy in her car. Presumably possessing meth. So when they thought that the cotton candy was meth, they put her in jail with a $1 million bond. When they thought this guy had beaten this girl up and carved an X into her chest with a razor box cutter, they only put him on for $150,000 in bond. This is one of the problems, another problem with the war on drugs. Violent criminals being let loose so we can keep drug offenders locked up. So $1 million for the phony meth dealing charge, but only $150,000 bail for the phony brutal assault, violent assault and cutting an X into somebody's chest with a box cutter. And so anyway, they paid his bond and got him out because there's only $150,000. But for 9 months, they had this hanging over his head, and he could have gone to jail for a first-degree felony, burglary of a habitation with intent to commit additional felonies. You put all that stuff together, he's looking at a 99-year prison sentence, if convicted. His mother insisted that this couldn't happen. Once they found out what the specific charges were, and it had a specific date and time, then they could prove that he wasn't there. See, that's what they never gave Brett Kavanaugh. It fell apart for other reasons. But that's why the burden of proof is on the accuser. Yes, they have a right to be heard, but they have to be specific about this. And so the issue was that supposedly this happened on September the 20th, 2017 at 7:20 p.m. They, on the other hand, were at an event. They were looking at a skincare line, and they had posted a selfie at about that time at the event at a hotel. They were an hour away from the accuser's home. They had text messages between the mother and son showing that they had planned to carpool to this event. They had cell phone tower data that proved that they were inside the hotel. They had witnesses verified that they had interacted with him at the hotel. So he wasn't there. They could prove that he was somewhere else because they had a date and a time and more specifics. They had witnesses to prove that he was innocent. She didn't have any witnesses to prove that she was to prove her lies. However, the damages are immense. They had to still pay $250,000 in legal fees, and he was rejected from the Army. He applied. He wanted to join the Army. He was rejected because of the charges. Can he clear his name? Who knows? See, this is why you have due process, and yet we don't hear about due process for most of us. Lindsey Graham, who was so vociferous in defense of Brett Kavanaugh's due process, is the same guy who says to you, shut up, you don't get a lawyer. If they accuse you of terrorism, shut up, you don't get a lawyer, because that's an important crime. Well, I think sexual assault is an important crime as well. You should have due process. You should have the presumption of innocence. You should have a lawyer, regardless of what the accusation is, and regardless of whether or not you're a friend of Lindsey Graham or Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi or President Trump. And so the only thing that we look at now is that the only thing we're supposed to be concerned about, of course, is Jim Acosta. We're not to be concerned about what is happening to Julian Assange as he's being set up. We're not supposed to be concerned about what they've done to General Flynn or to Roger Stone or what they're trying to do to Jerome Corsi. Oh, it's only Jim Acosta. Actually, I think we ought to start calling him Jim Acoster because he accosted the intern. We should only care about whether or not Jim has rules applied to him for his White House privileges. It's not a right. It's not infringing on his free speech right. It's not infringing on the press organization there. It's about that one reporter who insists, along with the media, along with the federal judicial system and these political judges, that he has a right to go in there and to troll President Trump. That's absolute nonsense. And what was interesting yesterday was it came out, first of all, that the White House is going to pull his press pass again. Then they had an update. Then they came out and said, Jonathan Carl said, well, a senior White House official tells me the White House is dropping its effort to ban Jim Acosta for his behavior. And then they came up with another update from the White House itself, said that they had fully restored Acosta's press pass. Isn't that wonderful? Jim Acosta has now been restored. We don't care about Julian Assange. We don't care about any of these other people. Don't care about your due process, but we do care about CNN. The people who have pushed to shut down InfoWars and many other organizations that they cannot compete with. You got BuzzFeed out there saying, oh, we're going to start taking donations on our site. Why? Because they're failing. BuzzFeed, like CNN, pushing censorship of media organizations like InfoWars they can't compete with. They can't compete with us. Why? Because they're lying to people, and people understand that. People knew, even when the Stalinists only had two press outlets, people knew it was a lie. Izvestia and Pravda. No news in Izvestia, no truth in Pravda. And there is no news or truth in BuzzFeed or CNN. As they said, we created these rules. We've now created rules to satisfy the judge. Again, President Trump doesn't need to do that. He is equal to the judiciary. And I would argue superior to any of these federal judges who are dictating everything that he does. And at some point, he's going to have to stand up. I don't think that this is necessarily the hill to die on, to make a martyr out of Jim Acosted. But we'll talk about those rules, and we'll talk about what Carl Bernstein, the fascist censor, wants to do. Yes, the old Heidi Ho from CNN. Actually, I wish they would give Jim Acosta the old heave-ho. We're all hoping that that would happen. It will eventually, because he's not going to be able to behave himself. As the White House said, we've created these rules with a degree of regret. But given the position taken by CNN, we now feel obligated to replace previously shared practices with explicit rules. Yes, we're going to have to explain this to Jim Acosta. So here's some of the mismanners rules, if you will. A rule book of etiquette just for Jim Acosta. Jim, who likes to accost interns. This basically, it boils down to this. Jim, raise your hand. Wait until you're called on, Jim. And then don't talk forever. In other words, don't be a hog. Don't be a bore. Don't be a pig, Jim. Now, I know you work for CNN, and we've seen your personality, and we know that you can't, because if by nature you're a pig, you're a pig. So you're going to act like a hog. You're going to act like a bore. But in a letter from White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders and communications chief Bill Shine, they explained it. The letter laid out these different rules of conduct for Jim Acosta, who obviously was never taught manners by his parents or by the schools that he attended. Yield the floor, unless at the discretion of the president or other White House officials answering questions, a follow-up question or questions are permitted, after which follow-ups, the journalist will then yield the floor. You'll eventually yield the floor, Jim, or we will get somebody bigger than the intern to give you the heave-ho. Number two, when a journalist has had his or her questions answered, the journalist is expected to yield the floor. You notice how they continue to use that same phrase, yield the floor? The unyielding Jim Acosta, this guy who wants to be in the spotlight so desperately. I think President Trump understands the real way to control Jim Acosta is not to show his face on TV. Don't turn the cameras on him. So the journalist, once they have had their question answered, is expected to yield the floor. And when applicable, physically surrender any microphone the journalist is using to the White House staff for use by the next questioner. Instead of wrestling with her, giving her a karate chop, and yes, he did. He lied about that. He said, I didn't touch her. Well, he did touch her. And so then the next thing was, oh, you sped that up to make it look worse than it is. No, we just zoomed it in. You can do the experiment yourself. Isn't it so funny that everybody, and that's the thing that I find amazing, is how all of the press and the press organizations, Reuters, all of them, came out and said, oh, look, President Trump is lying. InfoWars is lying. Oh, he didn't do anything. Oh, he did. Who are you going to believe? Your lying eyes or the lying press, the establishment press, this White House press cartel that is there? Oh, and they have much to say about this as well. The White House Correspondents Association, this little union, this little monopoly that they've got there. They said they were complaining because they had no role in crafting any of these procedures for future press conferences. In other words, they don't like these rules of having to yield the floor, having to wait upon to be called, having to behave themselves, basically. As long as there's been White House press conferences, White House reporters have asked follow-up questions. Well, that's in there. That's in there. We fully expect this tradition will continue. Ah, that's the operative word, isn't it? Tradition. And so you look at this little statement at the Hill from the White House Correspondents Association. Number one, they are ticked off that they didn't write the rules because, you know, they're in charge, this little guild, this little cartel. So they don't like that. Number one. Number two, they have a tradition. So what? You don't have a law. There's no requirement for the president to hold a press conference. There's no requirement for him to even call on Jim Acosta. And if Jim Acosta wants to jump up and scream, then fine. You know what? There's a time for that. All of us who have been reporters here at InfoWars have had situations where we will speak up out of turn or confront power. That's not what he was doing. He was lying about the situation at the border. Oh, it's no problem and so forth. Well, you know, it is a problem. We can see that. I mean, the real problem at the border is that the military is not doing enough. There's not enough of them there, and they're not doing enough. That's the real problem. The fact that they're going to go home for Christmas, that's a big problem. The invasion, however, is real, and it's not a caravan. It is an invasion, and that is real. That's the problem. Now, we even had Jeff Flake, who loves Jim Acosta, continue to sell the idea that there is no such thing as a caravan that we got to worry about. Yeah, I wouldn't be worried about a caravan either. I'd be worried about invasion, though, and that's what's really going on. Selling that idea, even as they're climbing over the wall. Jeff Flake is such an idiot. Such an idiot. But let's talk about Carl Bernstein. This is the guy, the legendary journalist, Carl Bernstein, who now works for CNN. And he got on this fascist Carl Bernstein, this censor Carl Bernstein, got on the censorship news network, CNN, and said, we should be the ones to decide what the American people see about what President Trump has to say. We should not cover these events live. We should go there, and we should record them, and we should edit them. Edit them. Oh, that's what they've always done, isn't it? That's why they don't like free speech on social media. They want to be able to edit. They want to be able to remove. They want to be able to flush this stuff down. I thought they were very upset because they thought that we had edited Jim Acosta. No, we just zoomed in on it. We didn't alter it. But they want to alter what President Trump has to say. We didn't alter what Jim did when he accosted the intern. Here's what Carl Bernstein, the fascist censor at the censorship news network, CNN, had to say.
I also think because of Trump's lying and his conduct of the presidency, which is so different than anything we've ever seen, we need to start thinking of a different way to cover his press conferences and briefings.
Of course, he's talking to Brian Stelter.
I don't think we should be taking them live all the time and just pasting them up on the air because they're basically propagandist exercises because they are overwhelmed by his dishonesty
and lying. You can't handle his free speech, can you?
How could we cover them differently? Maybe we should be there, edit, decide as reporters what is news, and after the press conference or briefing is over, then go with that story with clips rather than treating the briefing or press conference as a campaign event, which they really are and which we did in the campaign as well. We gave them all this free airtime on cable news especially. We need to start treating it like a news
free
event.
Free airtime.
And look, in cable...
That's the only way they make money is when they put President Trump on.
We can put up the total press conference on our website so that everybody has the chance to see it, or the briefing, and we ought to, and it's a matter of record, and we can be the place of record so everybody can see every word if they want it. But we need to start editing. We need to say, here's the story, not just give him a microphone when we know that his methodology is to engage and manipulate us on the basis of lying, propaganda, and agitprop. Mm. I would never have advocated this many years ago, but gradually, and it doesn't start with Trump. I think we rethink how we cover the presidency institutionally on the air in terms of live television, especially.
Hear that? Hear Carl Bernstein? He accuses the president of propaganda and says we can't let him speak. Why? Because they can't win the debate. They can't win the debate with InfoWars because we got facts. They can't win the debate with President Trump because he's got facts. You had Jim Acosta up there in his face continuing to repeat the same lying charge. Oh, there is no caravan that's coming here. They're not going to be coming here. There's no threat to us. And President Trump, well, you can see them. You can see them going over the wall. You see that? And he was winning the debate on facts. And so now their only strategy is to censor. See, when the left can't defeat you with argument, they want to take away your voice. They want to take away President Trump's voice. They want to take away your voice on social media. They don't want you to see things. They don't want you to hear things. And most importantly, they don't want you to be able to share and speak on social media. They can't defeat InfoWars. They can't defeat President Trump. So they want to censor us all. Now they want to censor President Trump. He calls it propaganda. Carl Bernstein, the CIA shill, he is the propagandist. He is the one who knows what propaganda is. Oh, we're going to edit it. We will edit it down. We will decide what you can and cannot see. Folks, this is the outer limits that we have now entered. We control the horizontal. We control the vertical. Sit back. For the next news broadcast, CNN will decide what you are allowed to see and what you're allowed to hear. That is what they have done in the past. That's what the news media did as I was growing up, and they want to return to that again. That is their desire. Just as we see Antifa when they show up. They have nothing to say. They simply want to beat up people. They want to cover up the signs, as we talked about many times. They show up to the signs. We're talking about black genocide at Planned Parenthood. They show up with completely black, blank signs to cover our signs. They had nothing to say. They had no argument to make. CNN can't win an argument, so Carl Bernstein says, let's censor the president. Pathetic and despicable CNN. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Yeah, that's one of the most disgusting clips I've ever seen. You know, nothing makes me more upset than to see people begging for their freedoms to be taken away because they're begging for my freedoms to be taken away at the same time. I know they don't deserve to be free if they have that kind of a mindset. But they're begging for my free speech, my free press, to be taken away as well. They're demanding that my guns be taken away or my due process be taken away. Oh, no, no, no. We're not going to have due process for anybody. If it's the right kind of, if I like this accuser, that person doesn't get any due process. And to watch Carl Propaganda Bernstein at the censorship news network, CNN, talking to Brian Stelter, George Costanza, you know, looking at those two guys sitting there talking about how they're going to censor President Trump. Why? Because they can't handle him. They want to debate him. They want to grandstand on television. They want to have all the microphone, and then you hear him say, you know, we put him up there for free. You are making a fortune off of President Trump. They would be nothing. I mean, I understand that their ratings have collapsed below that of SpongeBob SquarePants at the Cartoon Network because of the lies that they tell. But they're still making the money that they make. You know, they're still making their SpongeBob SquarePants revenue because they put President Trump on. People get on there to watch President Trump, even though the viewers of CNN hate President Trump. They tune in to watch President Trump and watch these guys take him on. I'm sure that they're disappointed that they're not doing a better job of taking on President Trump. That's why they have to edit it to make themselves look like they are winning. But they're still able to sell all these drugs from the big pharmaceutical companies and make a lot of money just because people tune in to watch them troll President Trump. It's pathetic. And really, Fox News is no better. Chris Wallace, in that interview that he had with President Trump, Fox News bragging about how they stand with CNN. Good, you stand with them. You stand with them on the wrong side of freedom of the press. You stand with them silent as they promote censorship of InfoWars. You stand silent, Fox News, with the exception of Tucker Carlson, as they applauded censorship. They pushed it. They applauded it. They want more. They wanted deplatforming later, 2 months later, 800 additional news outlets. Fox News, silent. They stand with CNN. And they stand with McRaven. You had Chris Wallace out there, McRaven, a political operative, takes on President Trump. I played that clip for you yesterday. I'm not going to play it again. But you could hear Chris Wallace say, you know, McRaven, and President Trump says, Hillary Clinton supporter. McRaven, the former head of Special Forces, a former committee, you know, and they're going back and forth. And President Trump is saying he's a backer of Hillary Clinton. He's a Democrat. He's this. And Chris Wallace just keeps running down his resume. Oh, but he got a medal for good conduct or whatever. You know, every little thing. He helped little ladies cross the street in Afghanistan before he dropped a bomb on them. All of that stuff, right? Who is this McRaven guy? You know, we have after that, after Chris Wallace stood up for him, defended him to President Trump. Don't you criticize retired Admiral William McRaven. And you had George W. Bush say that any criticism of McRaven was disgusting. Leon Panetta, former defense secretary, former CIA director under Obama, and former director during the alleged bin Laden raid, which, frankly, I still don't believe. I said it demonstrates a profound lack of understanding of how our military and intelligence agencies operate. Remember that clip where Leon Panetta was explaining to Jeff Sessions how the military operates? We go to NATO and the United Nations, and we decide what we'll do, and maybe we will inform Congress, and maybe we won't. That's really how the military works, according to Leon Panetta, CIA, deep state, military industrial complex expert.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
So again, yesterday, we showed the clip of Chris Wallace holding up Admiral McRaven, who said that President Trump, by criticizing the press, saying they're not telling the truth, by saying that CNN is the enemy of the people. Of course, this is reported by WTVM as saying that the media is the enemy of the people. Well, maybe that's a distinction without a difference because, you know, we have Fox News is now standing with CNN all against President Trump. And in defense of Jim the Acoster, so I guess, yeah, you're not allowed to say that it's CNN that wants to take away your free speech. CNN that wants to censor and shut down and continues to try to shut down everything they can, InfoWars. They're not the enemy of the people. Well, if you're the enemy of free speech, if you're the enemy of a free press, you are the enemy of the people. CNN is the enemy of the people. And so is Fox News as an organization. again, I draw a distinction between Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and others who have spoken about this censorship. They were not silent. They did not applaud it. But Fox News was silent, and they have applauded CNN. It is not the greatest threat to democracy to take away the credentials of one CNN troll at the White House, to take away his privileges. Those are White House privileges. There's the difference between privileges and rights. Rights are what CNN is trying to take away from all of us. Privileges is what the White House is going to take away from Jim Acosta, granted to him. And they're going to take those away because he's not going to be able to behave himself. They've given him a set of written rules. Let's see if he can behave himself. It won't last long, I guarantee you. He wants to be in the spotlight. And, of course, so does McRaven. But as President Trump said, well, you know, as he pushed back against Chris Wallace, Chris Wallace said, well, McRaven, and of course, McRaven is an honorable man. McRaven cannot be criticized because McRaven commanded special forces. So he's obviously knows what he's talking about. No, not necessarily. As Leon Panetta had pointed out, you know, he said that President Trump demonstrated a profound lack of understanding of how military and intelligence agencies operate. They operate at the discretion of NATO and the UN, not at the discretion of Congress, or necessarily even at the discretion of the president. I mean, Congress is supposed to decide if we have a war. Jeff Sessions couldn't believe that when he was questioning Panetta. He goes, oh, I can't believe you saying that. You, Congressman, you know what Constitution says. You know you're supposed to get our permission. We will let you know what we decide, Senator, said Leon Panetta, arrogantly, sneeringly. And Jeff Sessions was like, golly, I can't believe my ears. And did nothing. Just like Grassley, who knew about the felonies committed by Clapper and Brennan, and said, wow, golly, I got to expose this. No, we classified that memo that shows our felonies that we're spying on you. You mean I can't tell anybody about this? No, you can't. You can't tell anybody about the felonies that we created. Oh, okay. Oh, gee. He had legal immunity. And as John Kiriakou, if you haven't seen that interview I had with him on Friday, you need to see that. I think we're going to replay that on Thanksgiving or one of those days. We're going to be off Thursday and Friday. But that interview that I had with John Kiriakou exposed how they committed felonies against Senator Grassley 4 years ago. Senator Grassley then was gagged when they classified that order. He was afraid to say anything about it until somebody at the CIA said, okay, we'll unclassify it. So then he talked about it, but nobody in the press, nobody at CNN, nobody at Fox News cares that Brennan and Clapper committed a felony and then classified that felony, another felony. They don't care. So you should care. You know, John Kiriakou is a guy who went to jail as a whistleblower to expose the crimes of these people. Chuck Grassley won't pay any political capital. He wouldn't go to jail because he's a senator. He has immunity. But he won't expend any political capital to expose the crimes of these people. That is the gutlessness of people, even when they know the right thing. Like Grassley and Sessions. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. McRaven went on to say, I love George W. Bush. I love Barack Obama. I just hate President Trump. He's the greatest threat we've ever had to democracy. Well, the RNC came back, Republican National Committee, and defended Trump in a Twitter post from the official GOP account. The RNC noted that McRaven was reportedly on Hillary Clinton's short list for vice president in 2016. They also added he's been critical of President Trump, even dating back to the 2016 campaign. He's been criticizing President Trump for 2 years. That's why President Trump said he's a Hillary supporter. He's a Democrat. And Chris Wallace just kept saying, but he's an admiral. Therefore, he's admirable. They said he's hardly a non-political figure. President Trump was referring to him as a Hillary Clinton fan, as an Obama backer, but Chris Wallace would have none of it. He could not stop with the military resume. Sorry, you know, if he's going to get into politics, he needs to develop a thick skin, and he is not above criticism. But let's talk about when he was in the military. Because when we go back to 2013, do you remember Jade Helm? Do you remember asymmetric warfare? Do you remember when Joe Biggs and I went to AP Hill and we showed you how they were building replicas of American cities? In other military bases, they're building replicas of rural areas. They're training to fight here in America, to fight Americans in an asymmetric warfare battle. Now, this is not practicing to go from building to building. They've had those types of drills and practices. They just build just generic buildings, and they practice. You've seen it portrayed many times on movies if you've never been in the military, participate in this. Now, they get on either side. They take turns going through the door, clearing it, and so forth. They can practice that on just a shell of a building. No, these are very detailed buildings, churches, schools, transportation systems, office buildings, and so forth. Streetlights, the corner of which were first in Maine. We stood there first in Maine. Took pictures of this. And this is U.S. Special Operations. They were also running Jade Helm. Mastering the human domain. Here's what McRaven said back in 2013 as Special Operations Commander. He said, you know, we have to start to focus again on our non-kinetic skills. Kinetic skills would be the fighting ability that we all typically think of. But he goes back to what they were really set up to do. Psychological operations. Winning the hearts and minds of people. Regime change, that type of thing. But basically psychological operations done on the people. He said, we'll always have the world's best direct action force, said McRaven back in 2013. He said, but we need to focus more on traditional special operations missions, such as nation building and foreign forces training. I think they do need a lot of practice in that because they've never won one of these asymmetric warfare battles. And they will admit that. They have admitted that when they talk about it. And they also talk about mastering the human domain. That was the subtext of Operation Jade Helm, which I think was really a psyop. I think that was really put out there to see who their opponents were. That's what they do when they master the human domain. They map where their political opponents are. Human domain analytics, activity-based intelligence, and non-kinetic operations. We're all looking for them to jump out of planes and stuff. No, no, no. They were running a PSYOP operation. They were running human domain analytics. He said the human domain is what is important. Said McRaven at the time. He said, this human domain is shaped by the physical, cultural, and social environments that exist within a conflict. Mastering the human domain means that they silence the cannons on the battlefield of the information war. They do that with social media censorship. Censorship of my speech, censorship of your speech, pushed by the people at CNN and Fox News. To remain silent or applaud that kind of censorship, that kind of mastering and domination of the human domain. And if they can't silence you, they lose because they can't win the debate. That's what Carl Bernstein knows. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Gun confiscation was over the weekend. Joe Biggs on Twitter responded to an editorial by Congressman Swalwell out of California saying, we're going to take the guns. And, we'll offer you some money. If you don't want to take that money, we'll give you the back of our hand or a nuclear weapon if you don't like that. Because Joe Biggs said, you're going to go out and start confiscating guns from people. We're going to start a war. And he says, well, you know, we've got nuclear weapons, maybe too many of them, but they're legit. We can use them. Another guy, Democrat, office holder, politician, joins the debate and says, I think that discussion ended when we figured out how to drop bombs out of planes. Again, maybe they should go back and look at their success rate with asymmetric warfare. It's not going to be nearly it's not going to go down as well for them if they start doing that here domestically. First of all, they're going to be using Americans to do it, and there are going to be a lot of them who will just do whatever they're told. They'll just salute and follow orders, but there's going to be some who won't, and there's going to be a lot more people here in America who are armed than there are in these other countries that they've invaded. But then we have a reporter from Newsweek, Nina Burley. She tweets out, almost every single person I've heard of with an AR-15 has been a mass murderer. There you go. You have an AR-15. You are, by definition, according to this Newsweek, this failing news organization, you are therefore a mass murderer. Based on Twitter, she said, sample the rest of them that are scarily paranoid. Get on the right side of history. And she tweets it out to Joe Biggs. Well, I saw that. And I said, well, this is an example, first of all, of your bias and the kind of uninformed reporting that you do at Newsweek, which is why your organization is failing. But also said, allow me to introduce you to a good man with an AR-15 who stopped a bad man with an AR-15. Stephen Woolford, NRA instructor. Remember that? Down at Sutherland Springs? I said, by the way, I broke the news that it was a AR-15. CNN had falsely reported that it was a shotgun that he used to stop the shooting. So they wanted to demonize the AR-15. So CNN and other mainstream media said, oh, you know, that the killer had an AR-15. A mass shooter had an AR-15. The guy who defended people had a shotgun. Maybe, you know, it's one of those that Joe Biden recommends, an over, an under, side by side, whatever, you know, that type of thing. Women, get a shotgun. No, he had an AR-15. And I broke that news here early on that Monday morning after the shooting on Sunday with an interview that I had with the pastor, former pastor of that church, who's been on the show several times. And he was right. We broke that news here. Nevertheless, he was also honored later on by the National Rifle Association as a former NRA instructor who had defended other people. Woolford said he had an AR-15, and so did I. A good man with an AR-15 stops a bad man with an AR-15. Nina Burley needs to know that, but she's not going to talk about that. I tweeted that out on Libertarian. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can still find me on Twitter. They haven't taken me down yet. We'll see how much longer that lasts. Nevertheless, they are moving ahead with gun confiscation. They haven't reached the stage at which they're dropping bombs out. They're coming after people one by one. And the scary thing about this is the red flag laws, also known as extreme risk protection orders, ERPOs. And we've just had the first person killed by cops. They started doing this in Maryland October the 1st. By November 5th, they'd killed somebody doing this. They showed up at this man's house, 61 years old. They showed up at his house at 5 a.m. to confiscate his guns. Wake him up at 5 o'clock in the morning to confiscate his guns. He goes to the door. He's got a gun. He sets it down. He's confused. Not sure what's going on. An argument ensues. At some point, they say that he picked it up and the gun went off. And, struggle with picks it up. Another police officer jumps in. The gun goes off. Nobody was hit with it, but the other officer that was there shot and killed him. Now, his niece was there visiting him at the time. Her name is Michelle Willis. The man who was killed is Gary Willis, a 61-year-old Maryland resident. His niece, Michelle, said one of her aunts had requested the protective order to temporarily remove his guns. Michelle said that she had grown up in the house. She had been there Sunday night to move out her son, who had been helping to care for her grandmother. She said her uncle likes to speak his mind, but she described him as harmless. She said, I'm just dumbfounded right now. My uncle wouldn't hurt anybody. Willis said the officers should have continued to negotiate with her uncle. They didn't need to do what they did. But the reality is, as Gun Owners of America pointed out, this is part of a new dangerous wave of gun laws are being passed, frequently with the support of Republicans. It's happening across the country. Some Republican-controlled states, like Indiana and Florida, have also passed these laws. As Gun Owners of America have said, these laws are dangerous to freedom, they're unconstitutional, and they should be more properly termed gun confiscation orders. They can take your firearms. They can confront you with armed officers without you ever having any due process. These things can be, they allow the police or a health care provider or a family member, as in this case, Pretty much anybody can go to a judge and get an order to send a SWAT team to you. Now, how is that different, quite frankly, than the swatting pranks that are going on that have cost people their lives? You know, we have a lot of people who like, they think it's really funny. I'll call the police and report some kind of a serious crime, and they'll SWAT team these guys that I want to play a prank on. Or maybe they don't like them because they were playing a video game, and these other guys whooped them on the video game. So they SWAT them, call the SWAT team there. All of a sudden, you get this no-knock raid or something, and people have gotten killed. It's dangerous for the police officers as well as the people who are innocent and get attacked by this militarized SWAT team, which is a courtesy of the war on drugs. How is this different? You can go to a judge. This is called ex parte, I guess. You're tried in absentia. You're not there. They only argue only one side of the case is presented. There's nobody presenting your side. It's kind of like what we see at the FISA court. You got one judge and you got one prosecutor going in there, and nobody is there to represent you, and they can do all kinds of mischief to your life. Tried in absentia, ex parte. It's like the Star Chamber process. That's one of the reasons why, you know, people have suffered this same type of thing in the past. Just because we have different tools today than we did 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 400 years ago, doesn't mean that human nature has changed. We have these restrictions on what government can do. We have these due process regulations because human nature hasn't changed, especially the nature of those in power, the nature of those who have a monopoly on force. We don't want to have star chambers. We don't want to have things like FISA court. We don't want to have things like these red flag gun laws. Very, very dangerous. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about sex. It's going to be a Stern talk, not a Howard Stern talk, but it'll be a Stern talk about sex. They will be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Nowhere to run to, nowhere to hide. Well, you can take that two different ways. Some people want some privacy. They'd like to be able to have a place to go to have privacy. But they're not going to be allowed to hide because we have some people out there who have sexual fantasies. And those fantasies they demand will be fulfilled, regardless of what the rest of us think. They're going to fulfill their fantasies. Let's talk a little bit about sex. Let's talk about imaginary sex. Let's talk about some fantasies here. We got the Supreme Court being asked if schools can expose naked students to the opposite sex. This is a story from WND. Administrators tell boys who found a girl in their changing room to just tolerate it. This is coming up before the U.S. Supreme Court. They've been asked to review a case that asks whether or not school districts can require that students be exposed to naked members of the opposite sex. The third U.S. Court of Appeals has already said, yes, they can. That's our federal government. Yes, we can. Everything in your life is exposed to them. Every private detail of your life they can spy upon, and now they can expose you naked. Let's understand something. Either we're going to realize that the emperor has no clothes, or are we going to be left butt naked out on our own? I mean, they have no authority to do this type of thing. The emperor literally has no clothes to do this. But this is a school district, the Boyertown Area School District in Pennsylvania. They said students should be allowed to use restrooms and according to their gender identity, quote unquote, rather than their biological sex. Let me tell you what that is. Their gender identity is their gender imagination. I imagine myself to be this. They don't want gender to be defined as objective or biological. It's what's in their mind. So let's stop calling it gender identity. Let's call it gender imagination. Because some of these people will go on to imagine that they are dogs, for example. And I'm not making this up. We had a person, a man, who imagined that he was a woman. And we said, yes, we must respect that. Then later on, that transgender man or woman, whatever you want to say about that, imagined that he or she was a dog. And we, I guess, have to go along with that as well. During the 2016-17 school year, without informing parents or students, the school district in Pennsylvania opened its high school locker rooms and restrooms to students of the opposite sex based on the students' beliefs, their imaginations about their gender, said the legal group. The Alliance for the Defense of Freedom, Alliance Defending Freedom, said some male students learned of the policy while they were undressing in their locker room and discovered that a female student was changing clothes with them. Embarrassed and confused, the student sought help from school officials who told him they should just tolerate it and make it as natural as possible, quote unquote. The ADF senior counsel said students are struggling with their beliefs about gender. They need compassionate support. However, other people have privacy. So we have rights in conflict here. Yeah, they need some psychological counseling. But their imagination doesn't trump the privacy of other people. They said no student's recognized right to bodily privacy should be made contingent on what other students believe about their own gender. And, of course, Obama decided that he would force that issue by using the hammer of Title IX funding and withdrawing that from schools if they did not take away people's privacy based on somebody's imagination, what they believe about their own gender, regardless of what their biological objective situation is. ADF legal counsel said teenagers should not be forced to welcome members of the opposite sex into their showers, restrooms, or locker rooms based on what they believe about their gender. They should not be forced, quite frankly, to participate in somebody's sexual fantasy. That's what we're talking about here, right? Isn't that a form of rape, quite frankly? Raping your privacy? And then we get into this insanity. We have the, I guess we should call this Victor Victoria's Secret. Remember that movie? Julie Andrews in it, the guy from Robert Preston, the guy from The Music Man. Victor Victoria, it was an early exercise in cross-dressing and gender identity and so forth. Now you have Victor Victoria's Secret, and you have an executive at Victoria's Secret saying that he hopes to include a transgender model in the women's lingerie show. Ed Razek, the brand's chief marketing officer, got into a hotspot with an interview with Vogue. He said, I think we address the way the market is shifting on a constant basis. He said, if you're asking if we've looked at putting a plus size model in the show, we have. We've invented the plus size model show in what was our sister division, Lane Bryant. But he goes, but it's like, why don't you do size 50? He says, why don't you do size 60? Why don't you do size 24? It's like, why doesn't your show do this? Shouldn't you have transsexuals in the show? No, I don't think we should. Well, why not? He said, because the show is a fantasy. Well, so is the transgender identity. It is a fantasy. So why not? So progressives were very upset about that interview with Vogue, and he had to walk this back. And then he comes back and he tweets out. He says, my remark regarding the inclusion of transgender models in the Victoria's Secret fashion show came across as insensitive. I apologize. To be clear, we absolutely would cast a transgender model for the show. We've had transgender models come to the castings, and like many others, they didn't make it. But it was never about gender. Honestly, I really hope that transgender model will make the show soon. I admire and respect their journey to embrace who they really are. Okay, so follow that up with the fact that Victoria's Secret, their lingerie empire is collapsing, reports Zero Hedge. Maybe a better title would that would be that the lingerie empire is unraveling. Do you really think that people are going to buy into this fantasy of having guys dress up in women's lingerie? I mean, it's barely there. Maybe they could call it the Klinger Collection. I think that would be the way that they could sell this. The Corporal Klinger Collection. Except they may have to be careful to cover his privates. Amid a continued slowdown in sales and a lack of diversity, wait until they have the Klinger Collection. Then it's going to get really bad. Then we get to Stormy Daniels. who says that Trump completely destroyed her porn career. Is she complaining about overexposure or underexposure? I think the person who destroyed her career is Michael Avenatti. This is a guy who even the people who were on her side said, what's up with this guy? How much time is he actually spending on her case? Because he's always in front of the cameras. He's never working on her case. Yeah, yeah. He was a celebrity whore, kind of like Jim Acosta. And then we have the feminist. You know, there is a pecking order, isn't there? There is a pecking order for all this identity politics. And the people at the very top right now are the transgenders. It used to be the feminists, but the feminists are now subservient to the transgenders. I've got a lot of examples of this. We have, as the Free Thought Project pointed out, Megan Murphy was hammered. She put out a message. She's talking to people about transgender issues as they conflict. And we've had these types of situations in the UK. We had a situation where they were shut down at a, they had a conflict between the LGBT and the L's. So the L's were fighting the T's and the G's and the B's were stuck in between. But they were very angry because they didn't want the transgenders as part of their lesbian feminist thing. And this woman tweeted out, Megan Murphy, tweeted out and said, yeah, but men aren't women, though. And because of that, she got a notification from Twitter that she was violating the rules against hate conduct. And she said, this is effing BS. And she spells it out on Twitter. She says, I'm not allowed to say that men aren't women or to question, ask questions about the notion of transgenderism at all anymore. That a multi-billion dollar company is censoring basic facts and silencing people who ask questions? Oh, welcome to the world of corporate censorship that all you people on the left applauded before. Liberal feminists are realizing that they don't have free speech. To say that men aren't women is labeled as hateful on Twitter. And some of them are saying, we can't believe it, but President Trump is the person who is saving us from this kind of persecution. Because the feminists are very upset about what is going on with the transgender agenda. I want to get to that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the products that we have right now as part of our Black Friday Week special. It's going to be running through to next Monday, I believe. We have discounted 50% off all of our InfoWars Life products at InfoWarsStore.com and free shipping and double Patriot points. Again, the Patriot points are things that you get as you order products from InfoWars Store. You get Patriot points and you can use those for further discounts. So free shipping, 50% off on things like BrainForce Plus, Survival Shield, X-ray Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, Super Female Vitality, Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver. The Ultimate Bone Broth, our Super Blue Toothpaste, which doesn't have fluoride in it, has a good halogen iodine, and it has nano silver to fight bacteria as well as viruses. All those things. Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid. DNA Force, that's a big savings on DNA Force. You can find all those products 50% off, plus free shipping, plus two times the normal Patriot points at InfoWarsStore.com. Also, I'll add 50% off all storable food as well at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. Okay, as we're looking at this, this individual was debating back and forth. Murphy is her name. She said, seriously, are you telling me that a multi-billion dollar company is censoring basic facts, silencing people who ask questions about this dogma? She said, that's insane. Yes, it is. We've been telling you this for quite some time. I am telling you that, Megan Murphy. I've been telling you that for quite some time. Maybe you weren't listening to me. She said that the trans activists had been targeting her account for several months. She said it was clear that someone had been combing through her tweets and reported them for hateful conduct because she said men aren't women. One person came back and said, well, I don't agree with everything you say, but I absolutely support your unalienable right to say so. That's basically the summary of what Voltaire wrote. You know, he went to jail. He was persecuted many times, beaten, so forth, because of what he had to say. You know what? You don't have to agree with everything somebody has to say. You don't have to agree with anything anybody has to say. If you support free speech, you support free speech. And that means supporting people that you don't agree with. at all, at all. If we lose that, we have lost something that is vital to our society, to our history, to our culture, that was hard won. We had to fight very hard to get those things. But it's not just this battle back and forth between the feminists. It's also the battle for your children. University of Kansas is going to be creating feminist parenting groups to teach participants strategies for raising what they call intersectional feminist children. Let me tell you something. When she looks at this censorship, the censorship that was enacted by the Democrat Party, by the DCCC, the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee, they identified over 10,000 people to be taken down in a couple of months before the election. They got a late start on it. They started in August. They immediately shut down 10 people. And then they said, we're going to identify more. They were bragging about the fact that they'd shut down 10,000 people. They said, we've got another 90,000 out there at least that we're going to shut down. They were being identified by this organization that is at Indiana University. It's a research group. They're using this, the Democrats are using this research group just like they have used the Southern Poverty Law Center to identify people that they disagree with and calling them, labeling them hateful. Well, this research group labels people as hateful or as robots. Robots. And once they're labeled as robots or hateful, then the Democrats submit those names. They submit that to the Democrats. The Democrats then submit those names to Twitter, and Twitter just bans them. No questions asked. And here's where this all comes together, the censorship and the sexual perversion. The guy who is chief of this research group at Indiana University also sits on the board of the Kinsey Sex Institute. Yeah. Pushing this intersectional feminist, transgenderism, imagination stuff. Celine Dion is launching a gender-neutral, stereotype-free children's clothing line. It's in conjunction with a corporation called New. She's going to call it Celine New. So it's going to be stereotype-free styles for kids aged 0 to 14. Let's get them before puberty so we can confuse them. They don't even know what they're doing. Let's give them hormone blockers like they're doing at some of the schools. 17 kids identified that. We had a whistleblower teacher saying they're manipulating these kids. She says, my product line is going to let children choose outside of stereotypes and norms so they can bring from within their own tastes and preferences. Eastern Michigan University has canceled the vagina monologues because it isn't inclusive enough. It's too focused on women. We can't do that. We got to have the transgenders in there. Eastern Michigan University canceled the vagina monologues. They said that students specifically felt that the show was inappropriate because it does not include transgenders. This play, Vagina Monologues, was written in 1994 by Eve Ensler. Features a series of stories about women and their life experiences from the perspective of being a woman. When it was first performed, the New York Times called it the, quote, most important piece of political theater in the last decade. But now the feminists are on the outs because they are below the transgenders on the pecking order. Got to shut that down, censor it at the university. A feminist group said, transsexual activists are silencing us. Women are speaking out after Twitter blocks them for speaking the truth about transsexualism, just like this other woman. They said there are basic, incontrovertible biological facts. They're being labeled hateful conduct. A group called Fair Play for Women has now written an open letter to a peer of theirs who sits on the board of Twitter. She's a feminist. They're appealing to her. They said the words used to describe ourselves, our bodies, our biology, our experiences as women are becoming unsayable because you people at Twitter have decided what we can and cannot say. That is the oppression of political correctness. You've got feminists that are bashing a male-born trans woman in Montreal. So they got a man who identifies as a woman, and he takes over a feminist group. One of them, in one feminist organization, the executive director, rather, I'm sorry, not a feminist organization, but the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians, says, this is irony. President Trump is defending all women from legal and cultural erasure by the transgender lobby. She said, he is the U.S. women's rights champion. What transgenderism requires is that the term gender identity replace sex in the law. If that happens, the men who say that they have a female gender identity, or they imagine themselves to be female, gender imagination, will be legally defined by the federal government as women, and we can no longer distinguish legally between male and female because we've just eliminated the biology-based legal definition of women. That's what President Trump is fighting. All right, we've only got a couple of minutes, so I wanted to get on to Ocasio-Cortez. She had this to say, and maybe you've seen this. It's very short, about 15 seconds. Let's run her clip explaining to us how Congress and the federal government works.
Is that should we, and if we work our butts off to make sure that we take back all three chambers of Congress, rather all three chambers of government, the presidency, the Senate, and the House in 2020, we can't start working in 2020.
Okay, so she's going to take back. I never knew that she had it. She's going to take back all three chambers of Congress, or rather all three chambers of government, the presidency, the Senate, and the House. No, there are two chambers of the Congress. The Congress is one of three branches of the government, and she hasn't got a clue as to what's going on. Hasn't got a clue. So I think we should help her. You know, go back and let's approach it on a level that she'll understand. Let's go back to Schoolhouse Rock. Play the introduction there, Schoolhouse Rock.
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
'cause knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power, unless you're a Democrat, and then you don't need to have any knowledge. They just give you power. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a prime example of that. And then we have the famous Schoolhouse Rock, which explains how Congress works. And this is something that should be a part of the orientation for Democrat socialist millennials like Ocasio-Cortez, explaining to them what their new job is all about, because she has power but no knowledge. Here is Schoolhouse Rock. I'm just a bill. Or in this case, maybe I'm just a shill. Go ahead.
Woo, you sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington.
No, she didn't need too many steps.
That sad little scrap
just
of paper
primary.
Is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long
All right, so that's it. You all remember that song, right? I'm just a bill. I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill. Well, I think we need you to alter this for Ocasio-Cortez. I'm just a shill. I'm a socialist shill. Right here on Capitol Hill. Didn't need too many steps. Just had to win that primary and no problem. She said, you know, all you people out there trolling me because of my misspeaking and everything, you know, telling everybody that everyone has two jobs. Well, it's only 5% of the people out there. A lot of them have two jobs because they lost their full-time job because of Obamacare mandate. But nevertheless, she says, you want to troll me? Just man up and say that what you believe is health care is not a right. All right, I believe that. Health care is not a right, and you have no idea how you're going to pay for that because you don't even understand how Congress works. Thanks for listening.